Let's read Deuteronomy chapter 8. Every commandment which I command you today, you must be careful to observe, that you may live and multiply and go in and possess the land of which the Lord swore to your fathers. And you shall remember that the Lord your God led you all the way these 40 years in the wilderness to humble you and test you, to know what was in your heart, whether you would keep his commandments or not. So he humbled you, allowed you to hunger, and fed you with manna, which you did not know, nor did your fathers know, that he might make you know that man shall not live by bread alone, but man lives by every word that proceeds from the mouth of the Lord. Your garments did not wear out on you, nor did your foot swell these 40 years. You should know in your heart that as a man chastens his son, so the Lord your God chastens you. Therefore, you shall keep the commandments of the Lord your God, to walk in his ways and to fear him. For the Lord your God is bringing you into a good land, a land of brooks of water, of fountains and springs that flow out of valleys and hills, a land of wheat and barley, of vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of olive oil and honey, a land in which you will eat bread without scarcity, in which you will lack nothing, a land whose stones are iron and out of whose hills you can dig copper. When you have eaten and are full, then you shall bless the Lord your God for the good land which he has given you. Beware that you do not forget the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments, his judgments, and his statutes, which I command you today. Lest, when you have eaten and are full, and have built beautiful houses and dwell in them, and when your herds and your flocks multiply, and your silver and your gold are multiplied, and all that you have is multiplied, when your heart is lifted up, and you forget the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage, who led you through that great and terrible wilderness, in which were fiery serpents and scorpions, and thirsty land where there was no water, who brought water for you out of the flinty rock, who fed you in the wilderness with manna, which your fathers did not know, that he might humble you and that he might test you, to do you good in the end. Then you say in your heart, my power and the might of my hand have gained me this wealth. And you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant which he swore to your fathers as it is this day. Then it shall be, if you by any means forget the Lord your God and follow other gods and serve them and worship them, I testify against you this day that you shall surely perish. As the nations which the Lord destroys before you, so you shall perish because you would not be obedient to the voice of the Lord your God. Let's all stand and we'll pray.
There was a great New England minister and educator and writer. His name was Cotton Mather. He once penned the words, "Religion begat prosperity, and the daughter devoured the mother." Religion begat prosperity, and the daughter devoured the mother. Here in this chapter that Susie read today, Deuteronomy chapter 8, Moses gives some commandments. And God tells the people that in the land in which they were ultimately to settle, that it was this fantastic place where they would now live the good life. But then comes a crucial PS, a warning not to forget. And a warning not to forget who gave them these directions, his truths, his commands, his promises. A warning not to forget where they came from. It's clear that the warning certainly is as relevant today in our age as it ever was. Because if we forget where we came from, then the journey from there to here is worthless. This chapter warns Israel, and by way of us, that if we forget, we will perish. this week. As I mentioned, we find ourselves in a Thanksgiving season. I wonder how many of us will actually embrace this holiday with honest thanks. We have, for many years, had this little book around the church here by Jerry Benjamin. It's called, What is the First Indication of Turning Away from God? It's a neat little book. It has a subtitle inside. It's, quote, Murmuring, Its Consequences, Causes, and Cure. And in this small book, we quickly come to see that one of the greatest causes to this sin of murmuring is an unthankful spirit. Well, that certainly can happen because we have a chip on our shoulders, and many of us do, a beef with God because life's journey just isn't going the way that we had it planned. The truth is that such a state occurs more often than not because we simply don't think about the journey at all anymore. How we got here. What's behind. We don't remember where we came from. We don't remember the road that brought us here. So chapter 8 of Deuteronomy picks up on the story of Israel at the end of 40 years of wandering in the wilderness. It's an epic moment in Israel's history. That first generation, the generation of the Exodus, they had failed to enter the rich and prosperous promised land that God had promised them. They failed because, first of all, they refused to believe God. They were afraid of the people that were living in the land, and because they simply rejected his implicit directions. And now that the first generation died out there in the wilderness, the second generation was about to enter in and take possession of the land. This generation was not willing to wander around in the wilderness for another 40 years. The book of Deuteronomy contains God's final words of exhortation to this generation before it would now enter into those riches and enter into those blessings that God was going to give them. You see, God was going to give them this land to possess, and it had remarkable prosperity and remarkable goodness. He was about to give them many great reasons to be thankful to him. And it was at this time that God, speaking to his people, Moses would give these final words of exhortation before they crossed over. Both God and Moses, you see, wanted the people to stop and remember. Furthermore, they wanted to never forget. I mean, consider the recipients of Moses' message here. I mean, can you imagine these people that were there listening that day? I mean, they had just come to the end of 40 years of wandering around and around in the wilderness. They had been former slaves who had suffered horribly under the hard bondage of Egypt. That alone, the fact that they were freed from that, they had so much to thank God for. And now, listening to Pastor Moses there, the prosperity that they would indeed eventually receive and eventually experience, now they had even more reason to thank God. Now think of us this morning. As a fellowship, a church, a people who have dramatically been rescued from our lost condition. Some of you are new around here, and some of you have been around here for many, many years, some decades. And I think about us and how each and every one of us were welcomed into this full covenant blessing of the God of Israel. And that we have so much to be thankful for this morning, so much to praise him for. And of course, that doesn't even, you know, begin to count the issue of eternal life, to be able to live for all of eternity in the presence of God, where, you know, they say the streets are made of gold and there are no more tears and no more crying. What about all the material prosperity we enjoy today? all the stuff also that money can't buy. Friends and family and wonderful memories and awesome experiences. Who would argue that as Christians, as a church body this morning, we are so very rich and so very prosperous. But in light of these things, in light of God's warning, we too need to heed this passage, just as the people of Israel did. We need to beware. Because all of the prosperity that we so freely enjoy today, there's a danger that we too may sit back and eat and drink and marry and give in marriage as they warned of the last days. It's a remarkable truth, really, that it's rarely hardship and austerity that causes us to drift away from God and church. In fact, it's almost universally prosperity that does that. Comfort does that. Self-empowerment does that. It seems the good times can kill us. And for many, it already has. I'd like for us to pull out some of the principles of this passage this morning. I'd like us to really to see how they apply to us. I've boiled it all down, if you can do so, to four words. And the first of those four words is remember. This is where the righteous attitude must begin, gang, by looking back over our shoulders on a regular basis, remembering where we came from, both individually as well as corporately as a church. That little book I spoke of warns us about forgetting and then grumbling and failing to walk in a humble acknowledgement of the road that God has brought us down. I think having been in this pulpit as long as I have has offered me some, I think, unique perspectives of time, of people's stories. I knew some of you when you were born and when your children were born. I watched countless times how people have come into this fellowship, into the family of God, and they experienced forgiveness, and they experienced acceptance from both God and this church. All their dirty laundry was buried. They were loved. They were allowed participation in the ministry. But then I also watched over time how they began to forget. They forgot who they were when they came in here. They forgot the condition that they were in. They forgot how messed up they were and how they really had nothing to offer to anyone, and yet God took them in and put them in the big leagues. They forgot how good of friends these are in this room. The brothers and sisters who put up with our socially unacceptable behavior, and we all have it. There have been those who have come in here over the years with marriages in crisis, suffering under bondage habits, many with criminal backgrounds, so be careful who you're sitting by. Sometimes they came in with even severe illness. And yet there was this outpouring of love and an outpouring concern on their behalf. We went through it with them, praying for them, helping their family and helping in their affairs, taking them meals and helping with their finances. We helped with their children when things were tough. We even taught those children the ways of Christ. But ironically and inexplicably, after all of that, they forgot all those blessings. And when they somehow believed that the crisis of their life was over, and they dumped this fellowship and everyone who blessed them, oftentimes with cries that we didn't do enough for them. See, if we're going to cultivate an attitude of thanksgiving towards God as a fellowship and individually, one of the most important things we can do is cultivate a good memory. You need to remember. Look at how Moses points them back to the things God had done for them during that 40-year period. Look how he calls them to remember the things that had happened. And it's amazing, even surprising, the first thing that Moses calls them to remember is how God humbled them. And many of us would go, I don't see that as a fond memory. But you see, it should be. It should be. Because part of that humbling brought you to this day. Verse 2 says, "And you shall remember that the Lord your God led you all the way those 40 years in the wilderness to humble you and test you to know what was in your heart, whether you would keep his commandments or not." So Moses, he starts off by urging them to keep his commandments back in verse 1. And then he lets them know that in that 40 years there that they wandered around in the desert, among other things, it was a test. We don't like that, do we? They're like the idea that God would test us. How dare he? But you see, it was intended by God to humble them and to reveal in them and to clarify them where their hearts truly were. And God wanted it revealed through the hard experiences of testing, the hard experiences of trials. And the question really came down to them, would they follow him and obey him or would they not? So throughout that 40 years of experience, throughout the entire time of testing, in all of those hard experiences, God had proven to them, as well as us in our journey here, that he really was worthy of their trust all along. He showed himself that he could be trusted and that he had their backs. Moses goes on to say in verse 3, "So he humbled you. He allowed you to hunger. And he fed you with manna, which you did not know, nor did your fathers know, that he may make you know that man shall not live by bread alone, but man lives by every word that proceeds from the mouth of the Lord." Now, many of you will recognize those words as being the same words that were uttered by Jesus himself in his wilderness experience. You see, Jesus didn't ask us to do anything that he didn't go through himself. When he was tempted by the devil there for 40 days, Jesus himself, God in human flesh, demonstrated trust in his heavenly Father as a divine provider, a provider for all that he needed. And he demonstrated that trust through a faithful obedience to his Father, what he was asked to do. You see, it wasn't very long after this event of Deuteronomy 8 that you could take it all the way back to leaving Egypt, that the people forgot to be thankful and they began to grumble. They began to complain. They had forgotten so quickly. Remember, they even said to Moses in a very faithless way that they'd wish they'd stayed in Egypt. I mean, they were looking for someone to blame for the things that, because things weren't going the way they desired. So they needed someone to blame. And in this case, it was Pastor Moses. They said Moses brought him into the wilderness to kill him with hunger. So obviously it was Pastor Moses' fault. And instead of punishment, ironically, God stepped up to care for them. In Exodus 16, it says, he told Moses, "Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you. And the people shall go out and gather a certain quota every day, that I may test them whether they will walk in my law or not. And it shall be on the sixth day that they shall prepare what they bring in, and it shall be twice as much as they gather daily." God literally caused food to fall out of heaven onto these people. The blessing, you see, came with only one caveat. And that was on the sixth day, they were to gather twice as much, enough for 2 days, because on the seventh day was the Sabbath, and they were not to work on the Sabbath. They were not to gather on that day. So for 40 years, every day, with a vivid reminder of God's faithfulness, every day. Not some long ago event, not a far-reaching event. No, every day they should have been reminded that God was faithful. That he did what he said that he would do. Even in the smallest and simplest requests here, for some, they couldn't do it. They just couldn't follow it. You know the story. Many of them tried to gather more. And they tried to save it overnight, and it spoiled, and it was full of worms. God wanted them to trust him daily. Daily. To not depend upon their own abilities and their own resources. Moses called them to remember other things that God had done for them. He reminded them, verse 4, for all these 40 years, your clothes didn't wear out and your feet didn't blister or swell. Think of that. I mean, you got anything you're wearing now that you've had for 40 years? God provided wonderfully for them, didn't he? But they just didn't seem to recognize that. They should be able to even look at their clothes on the back and their shoes on their feet and see for themselves that God's testimony is true. That God never lied. God has always been faithful. And we read on this passage, we see a lot of additional ways in which God blessed them, provided for them during their 40-year message or journey. Moses here reminded them that God was as he brought them out of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. That's where it started. Then he led them through a great and terrible wilderness. He kept them in his care. He protected them from the dangers of heat and wild animals and robbers and hostile nations. And when they were thirsty, God even provided water right out of the rock. Why did he do all this? Why did he do all this for us? It was to test them and to humble them, to prepare them for what was coming, to show whether or not they would trust him and do what he said. Oh, not for his sake, but for ours. He knows us better than we know ourselves. It was 40 years of intense training in trusting God that proved by actual experience that God never fails. So as we approach this Thanksgiving season, have you taken time to remember that? The second word we need to note is the word obey. This is how the chapter starts out. It says, be careful to obey all the commands I'm giving you today. Then you will live and multiply, and you'll enter and occupy the land the Lord swore to give your ancestors. And he picks up that same theme in verse 6. He says, so obey the commandments of the Lord your God by walking in his ways and fearing him. I mean, first of all, look at the description of the land that he's about to give them. I mean, you talk about a paradise. For the Lord your God is bringing you into a good land of flowing streams and pools of water, with fountains and springs that gush out in the valleys and hills. It is a land of wheat and barley, of grapevines, fig trees, pomegranates, of olive oil and honey. It is a land where food is plentiful and nothing is lacking. It is a land where iron is as common as stone and copper is abundant in the hills. Now, man, that sounds good to me. And these people came out of 40 years of nothing but sand. Can you imagine? What a blessing that must have been to the people First of all, who had been in slavery all those years? I mean, plenty of water, plenty of produce, plenty of natural resources. What a wonderful gift God was giving to them. What a rich blessing he was pouring out on them. And that rich blessing that was being presented to them was one of the reasons why God was saying, look, I am blessed you so much, obey me. They weren't called to obey him in order to receive this. This wasn't a conditional promise. He's, look, I'm already giving you this. So it wasn't an issue of earning it. They were already being freely given these things. They were to obey him as a response to his grace. John tells us in 1 John 4:19, we love him because he first loved us. We never earn his love, because by loving him, our love towards him is always a response. Before the foundations of the earth were formed, I knew you. Third, we find the word thank. When you have eaten your fill, be sure to praise or bless the Lord your God for the good land he has given you. Now, it's interesting, the word that Moses uses here, translated praise or bless, it's barak, and it's related to the Hebrew word for knee, which is berak. Why do I bring that up? Because to bless in this sense means to adore with bended knee. So we're talking about something more than table grace here, guys. We're not talking about thanks over a meal. It speaks of an overwhelming heart, mind, and expression of worship. It's acknowledging that God is truly the good provider who not only meets our daily needs, but he's poured out blessing upon blessing above and beyond our needs, blessings just to bring us joy. Clearly, God here takes pleasure in our enjoying the good things he gives us. The quintessential and perfect dad. The people of Israel, according to verse 12, they were allowed to eat and be full. You can remember that on Thursday. You've been given permission. We've been given permission to build beautiful houses and dwell in them. To multiply herds and flocks, verse 13. To multiply silver and gold, verse 13. And even see to it all that it multiplies. This isn't a prosperity doctrine I'm pushing today. I'm just telling you that God has given us an abundance above and beyond what we need. Food, houses, money, things. Can we deny that we have been so blessed? I mean, all I remember is the street park out in front of the church. It was always just totally oil stained because all of our cars were like beat up wrecks and they all leaked oil all the place. And so we, after church, you looked and it's like, man, it's like there's a traffic accident here. I wish some of you could have known this church in its early days. See, for me, I haven't forgotten. I remember every day. Now, who would have ever thunk in those days that we would be here? Our humble storefront space with its white plastic chairs, donuts, and God forbid, percolated coffee for fellowship. In its birth, at the very beginning, when I first walked in, it was in a hotel conference room, and we had a boombox for worship. We've come a very, very long way. What about you? How has your journey been? What a feel of blessing I see before me today when I look out here. Marriages and children and vocations and finances and cars and houses. And I wonder if some of us still, though, cannot find hearts of thankfulness. We still murmur and we still complain. Still cannot respond to simple obedience that he asked because he blessed us. Cannot love as they are loved because for some of us it's never enough. More is the constant battle cry. One that will eventually lead us out of the promised land and back to Egypt. Do you ever notice, it's one of those weird little things, but do you ever notice that these folks who go back, they inevitably return to their same old stomping grounds and to the same old ways? I mean, they dig up the old friends they used to hang around with back in their BC days. They started in again on the same sins that they'd been forgiven of and given the power over. They forgot. They remembered only the leeks and onions they enjoyed in their bondage, and they forgot that life held no joy and no purpose, and they wanted out. That's why they came to Christ. But they forgot. Lastly, we are warned with the word beware. You see, there's danger in the land of plenty, gang. And the danger is that in the midst of our plenty, we're going to forget that it is God who so richly blesses us. We tend to want to think that we can do better on our own. And that what we do have, we did with our own hard work, our own diligence. We've done this all ourselves. You know, I think maybe now we don't need so much of God. And we certainly don't need these people around me. Verse 11, Moses says, beware. He says, for this is the time to be careful. Beware that in your plenty you do not forget the Lord your God and disobey his commands, regulations, and decrees that I'm giving you today. So in verse 17, he says, we are to be aware. We need to beware lest we forget before we start to think, I have achieved this wealth, this status, this situation, this life I have. I've achieved this under my own strength and my own energy. Verses 19 and 20. He says, I assure you of this. If you ever forget the Lord your God and follow other gods, worshiping and bow down to them, you will certainly be destroyed. Just as the Lord has destroyed other nations in your path, you also will be destroyed if you refuse to obey the Lord your God. And don't kid yourself that you think, well, I don't have any idols. I don't have any false gods in my life. No, in America here, we are the biggest liars throughout the whole world when it comes to these false gods. Our gods are shiny. Our gods aren't little statues. We don't burn incense to them. There's a neighborhood over by Stillwater. I drive through it quite a bit. It always makes me bristle. I mean, it's one of these new building house complex, and all the houses are walkout basement, and they all have their two other stories. So basically, when you look at the back, you see three stories, and they brag there on the sign that, you know, starting in the low 400s, and I'm like, wow. Won't that be nice? In the low 400s, I'll just take two. And I guess I've just traveled too much because I know I could get a whole village of Filipinos to live in one of those houses. You really need a house that big? 400, 500, $600,000? I must be getting old. But I think that we can start to think that it's more and more, and we need this, and we need this. I think we need to keep in mind what our wilderness journey was for. It was intended to humble us, to train us, to trust him, to enjoy the best of life. And I realize you only have my word for this, but I would hope that my 60 years would be worth something here. Truly, gang, you cannot buy the best stuff of life. You can't. I could sit down, and some of you have suffered through my stories. And they weren't about money and possessions. They were about people and experiences and how we laughed and how we cried and how we traveled. And it was crazy, crazy things. When you sit on the rocker on the porch as you age and near the door of heaven, that's what's going to matter. Not how many hours you worked, not how much money you made, not how nice of a car you had. It's the intangibles. If we forget the road behind us, then gang, it was for nothing. And we're in grave danger of having to go through it all again. And you know what? Life's too short to make that mistake. People go through midlife crisis. And I'm going to go out. I'm going to reinvent myself. I'm going to get me a new trophy wife. And I'm going to get me a nice shiny Corvette. And I'm going to live it up. That's too late, man. Tick-tock. A second important thing to keep in mind from all of this is just who these blessings come from. I hope it doesn't take you a lifetime to figure that out. It doesn't come from our own efforts. It doesn't come from ourselves. It only comes from God. The very fact that your heart keeps beating and you take another breath is because God says so. Every day you wake up and your feet hit the ground, it's because God gave you one more day. We are always ultimately dependent on Him. Verse 18 says, remember the Lord your God. He is the one who gives you power to be successful. And if we fail in that, we can just as quickly lose it as we gained it. Paul wrote to the Corinthians, and he said in 1 Corinthians 4:7, what do you have that you did not receive? Now, if you did indeed receive it, why do you boast as if you had not received it? And just as he is able to give us these rich blessings when we trust him and believe in him, he's also able to take those rich blessings of life back away from us if we ignore him. Again, verse 19 and 20, Moses warns us that if people forget God and turn away from him to find other gods, I assure you of this, if you ever forget the Lord your God and follow after other gods, worshiping and bowing down to them, you will certainly be destroyed. Well, that's just about as graphic and clear as he could possibly be. Just as the Lord has destroyed other nations in your path, you also will be destroyed if you refuse to obey the Lord your God. Now look, gang, he wasn't trying to be harsh. He wasn't trying to be mechanical in this. He was being fatherly. Verse 5, you shall know in your heart that as a man chastens his son, so the Lord God chastens you. Thomas Carlyle once said, for every 100 men who can stand adversity, there's only one who can withstand prosperity. If we forget the path behind us, if we forget what we were before, where we came from, if we forget that God so blessed us to bring us to this day, if we forget the rare blessing of these people that are around us this morning, and you forget the love that these people have brought into your lives, if we forget this rare church fellowship that we get to be a part of, we're going to stand in danger of losing it all. And we've seen several over just the past few years that have fallen in just such a manner. They forgot. And now it is no longer well with their soul. This is God's ground. Don't you ever forget it. This is God's show. We're just blessed and privileged to participate in it with Him. And we must never forget it. Because, gang, the price is steep. If my music team would come forward.